Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Thank you for joining me this weekend edition. I wanted to make sure and go live today and most likely tomorrow to make up for some weekday shows that I've missed. We have a lot of interesting stuff to go over, but I'm not going to be doing a TLEV research and review to follow this, but I will, however, be joining Titus on his live show, so be sure and jump over there and tune in once we're done with our live show here. We have a lot to talk about today, but first I want to note on something that, you know, there's a lot of discussion going on, you know, in regard to just about everything that we talk about on this show and the independent media. There's a lot of misinformation flying around, a lot of that coming from the people trying to manipulate what we're doing, as well as just a lot of disingenuous people out there trying to spread things as fact that they can't prove. And one of the big topics today, as I covered on the last show, was about the immigration migration going on. And there's a lot of people claiming they know what's going on with very little proof to back it up. Now, I'm not saying I have any further information either, but the bottom line is, especially those of you that watch this show and believe and embrace what I try to put forward, we need to be careful that we don't just believe claims just because somebody's saying them. We need to be careful that we don't believe claims about, you know, the UN invading the United States, or that Israel's behind making this happen, or that, you know, that other countries are behind making this happen, or any kind of other things that I've heard flying around. Any number of them could potentially be true. But it's important, as I always say, that we are better than the mainstream media. We can't jump on these false claims just because it suits a narrative that we want to be true or that we believe is true. Due diligence is important. Facts are important. So bear that in mind with everything that we hear, because there's a lot of people out there, even in the independent media, desperately trying to lead you astray. So keep that in mind. So for the first story of the day, a little follow-up on the Khashoggi story as well. Now, you know, again, a story that is nothing in comparison to the real tragedy taking place in Yemen. But I find it to be important to cover this story to show you that contrast, as well as the lies surrounding this. This one from Zero Hedge, entitled "Global Anger Boils Over Saudi Response. We Will Never Allow a Cover-Up of Khashoggi Murder." This coming from Turkey. Kind of absurd to come from a country that is least of rich countries that we should be trusting in any way. But of course, again, the focal point being that why so much anger and aggression and attention is being given to one person while such a tragedy is taking place that has been taking place for years now in Yemen that they still are not even acknowledging. Important thing to be asking ourselves. So a senior official in Turkey, Turkey's ruling party, said on Saturday that Turkey will never allow a cover-up of the Khashoggi killing. Remember, this is a country that just carried out a blood-soaked coup, executing and detaining thousands, which also seemed to just fly under the radar, of course, because they're a NATO ally. But interesting to think about that in comparison to this country trying to take the moral high ground about never allowing this to be covered up, except they still have yet to release the information they claim will prove they did it. They really cared about not covering it up, they might just give the information they claim would prove all of this. Now, Saudi Arabia's latest version, I guess, of the story asks us to believe that Mr. Khashoggi died after becoming engaged in a brawl, a fistfight, with officials who had been sent to meet him there. Possibly the 15 Saudi nationals that flew in that night, but we'll let you think about that for yourself. U.S. President Donald Trump, when asked late on Friday whether he thought the Saudi explanation was credible, he replied, quote, "I do. I do." Now let that sink in regard to everything that we've heard so far to date in this story, because what he and the administration currently there occupying that White House decide ultimately will likely lead the fray. Now, the Saudi narrative of death by brawl, if you will, contrasts with Turkish media that they basically say a Saudi hit squad carried this out. Now, an autopsy expert as well that traveled to Istanbul to kill Khashoggi and then dispose of his body, which has yet to be found. All of this included in the contrasting story. Now, again, doesn't mean we should be trusting Turkey in any shape or form, but it's interesting to see the contrast here, especially knowing how Saudis have lied about this story from the get-go and only recently admitted that there's a difference here. Now, Saudi officials told several journalists that his body, now admitting this, was handed over to what they're calling a local collaborator. Could that be a United States collaborator? That's something for you to consider, but a local collaborator for disposal. Now just think about what that means. And somebody just happens to die in a fistfight in your embassy and you just shuttle his body away to be dismembered and disposed of? This story continues to get more ridiculous. They say, well, they also criticized Donald Trump specifically for allegedly trying to help top Saudi leaders escape meaningful accountability. This coming from Saudi officials. The story is getting out of hand. But again, we should be asking ourselves, why? What is this accomplishing? Other than a big fiasco and distraction from many other things, maybe, which we're going to talk about later in this show. Now, on Saturday, the Saudis defied calls for a probe when Saudi Arabia's judiciary said it enjoys full autonomy to deal with the case of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The kingdom's justice minister, Waleed al-Samini, said this in a statement issued by the state news agency SPA on Saturday. What that basically means is that they have complete control over how this goes forward. And I understand that they have this because the United States allows this. Now, he added that Khashoggi case took place on Saudi sovereign territory, and it will be looked into by the Saudi courts when all procedures are complete. Really driving that point home. Turkey again said it would soon share its evidence of the Khashoggi killing with the world, and a conclusive result of the investigation is close. But we are holding our breath to see the video and the audio they claim has proof. Again, if there was really a desire to let the truth come out, why they would be holding back on this is, I mean, anybody's guess. But there's, in any kind of an investigation, you don't hold back the damning evidence as you're working with the potential murderer to investigate themselves. Now, the White House, however, has repeatedly stated its reluctance to crack down on Saudi Arabia too forcefully over fears of losing hundreds of billions in lucrative weapons contracts, not to mention access to Saudi oil, which should always show you where the real importance lies for the U.S. oligarchy. Despite their aggressive claims about liberty and democracy and human rights, I guess, unless it threatens their oil trade and their arms deals. If there's even a hint of a rumor of such an allegation about Syria or Iran, the U.S. would already be drawing up battle plans. We have to understand this ridiculous contradiction. The absurdity of them wavering over, well, maybe we should, you know, as there's evidence, whether the Turkish evidence even exists, there is plenty of evidence to suggest that, first of all, he died inside a Saudi consulate. What happened, we can speculate, but there's even evidence to suggest clearly that the Saudis were involved. The people that flew in, the people that left with bags and diplomatic immunity, the entire story. And the fact that they even lied first and said, oh yeah, he left already, and for weeks held to that story and then said, oh, well, wait, he died in a brawl and we sent his body away for disposal with a collaborator that we won't name. This is now the story, and they were failing to show you the beginning. Now, if any trace of this story was even brushing Saudi or Syria or Iran, I mean, a well-known terrorist group under the guise of the White Helmets will breathe about some kind of a chemical attack, and Donald Trump will launch weapons at Syria. Now, think about the contrast here as they're saying, well, maybe, I don't think I kind of believe him. We have to worry about our arms trade. Just notice this. While we have verifiable crimes, many of you in the show don't need to be pressed on this point, but maybe the person who just finally tuned in is going, yeah, that's a good point. Why are they so focused? Oh, I forgot, because Syria and Iran are the bad guys, and they're the good guys. It's as simple as that. Now, the Saudis have already threatened Trump, which many may not even be aware of, saying that pushing too hard for retaliation against the crown prince or implementing Saudi sanctions, as they do with anybody at a whim, would be disastrous, and they would essentially retaliate. If any kind of sanctions that they will pass on Venezuela or any other groups for being destabilized after actions the U.S. caused. But now that we see that something went down and they're at the very least complicit, no, you do anything like that. Same, which sounds very reminiscent of the way the United States acts to the International Criminal Court. Saying, no, you dare to investigate any of us and our allies, including Saudi Arabia, we will basically come at you. So why would we think it's any less of the Saudis doing the very same thing? They said, quote, if U.S. sanctions are imposed on Saudi Arabia, we will be facing an economic disaster that would rock the entire world. They said, quote, if the price of oil reaches $80, angered Donald Trump, no one should rule out the price jumping to $100, $200, or even double that figure. Now, they said this mess could ultimately throw the entire Muslim world into arms, into the arms of Iran, which would become closer to Riyadh than Washington, coming from Saudi Arabia. They said the truth is that if Washington imposes sanctions on Riyadh, it will stab its own economy to death, even though it thinks that it is stabbing only Riyadh. This coming from a staunch U.S. ally. Again, the focus here is the gross hypocrisy taking place, as Donald Trump is very clearly allowing them to get away with murder, as I see it, with the facts and the information we have at hand. Now, these very serious consequences, if it turns out that they're responsible, which it's clear that they are, to what degree and how and is up for you to decide, but they clearly disposed of the body by their own admission. So again, holding our breath for these very serious consequences that I doubt will ever happen. For no other reason than that it threatens the oil trade and their arms deals. Bottom line. Now, in a related story and a follow-up story that I wanted to touch on again, so we just recently talked about the UAE murder squad with U.S. personnel taking place in Yemen, killing politicians. And now a follow-up I wanted to touch on with some interesting points that were touched on by the Ron Paul Institute and Daniel McAdams and Ron Paul in an excellent article. It's entitled, Why Did an American Hit Squad Kill Politicians in Yemen? That's an excellent question. But the points they brought up in here are additions to what we recently talked about, which I found to be very important, especially in light of this recent seeming hit squad attack on a Washington Post journalist in Turkey. Could this have been potentially what we're talking about here? Now, they wrote, Daniel McAdams wrote, while Washington is in a frenzy over the apparent Saudi government murder of a Saudi Washington Post journalist, little attention's being paid to the news that the United Arab Emirates hired a guns-for-hire company founded by an Israeli-American, which I find to be very important, to assassinate members of a political party in Yemen. Pentagon and CIA-trained special operations troops were used to carry out assassinations, including a plan to blow up the party's headquarters building. Think about this. Now, it says, while Russian involvement in our elections has even yet to be proven, certainly blowing up a foreign political party headquarters and assassinating its leaders qualifies as election meddling, wouldn't you say? But of course, it's the U.S., so it's not the same thing. This again, let's just make hypocrisy the day of the word. The word of the day, as it could be almost all the time on this show in regard to the foreign policy contradictions we talk about. But it's absurd to see this. Now, as I said in the recent show covering this topic, starting in 2015, the United Arab Emirates sent a group of about a dozen mostly American private contractors to Yemen to conduct targeted killings of prominent clerics and political figures. Imagine how if this was in reverse, if Russia had done this, if Syria had done this, if Iran had done this. But again, I always go back to this good guys and bad guys, childlike veil over the world. Now, in Yemen, UAE has played a lead role in the ongoing Saudi coalition bombing campaign. That's important to understand in this whole thing, as they are just yet another piece in this human rights violating puzzle that we're looking at, while they continue to point the finger at so many other people, they're arguably doing none of these things. Now, the American assassination squad, as I pointed out before, receives $1.5 million a month. And to give a veneer of legal protections and immunity to these contractors doing illegal things, the United Arab Emirates actually commissioned the group as officers in the UAE military. These are U.S. military personnel at the moment holding dual authority in a different country's military with uniforms, IDs, and everything to carry out assassinations in another country. It's also revealed that one of the kill team contractors had been part of the CIA's own special forces paramilitary team, and another was actually still active in the SEALs and the Navy Reserve, and of course possessed a top secret clearance while killing Yemen politicians for the UAE, and who knows what else. Hopefully this is the most relevant story of the week when it comes to what we're talking about and what possibly went down in the Saudi consulate in Turkey. How, you know, we will never know because the Saudis are completely running the investigation of themselves. And Donald Trump's like, yep, I believe his story. Let's just forget about this and move forward. Probably what's going to happen, unless you continue talking about it. Moving on to the next story, something I think is very important that gotten very little attention that some people have been sending to me, and I wanted to follow up on myself and make sure that I looked into this. This coming from Global Research, entitled ISIS Captures 700 Hostages, Including U.S. and UE Citizens. Now, this story I found to be very important. Again, this is one of those stories, you know, you can, you know, take with a grain of salt. You can choose not to think that because it's coming from Vladimir Putin, which has also actually been followed up from other people, by the way, but he's the one that put this out there. But because it came from him, you could choose to just dismiss it outright if you'd like. But that's not very intelligent coming from any source, whether it be mainstream media, Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, Iran or Syria or Russia or Israel, doesn't matter. You should be taking information as it comes and vetting it, doing your due diligence. And this story, As I see it, seems to be pretty legit, but you may come to your own conclusions. ISIS has apparently captured 700 hostages, including U.S. and European citizens, in Syria, and is killing 10 people a day. This according to Russian President Vladimir Putin, which he said during a Valdai Discussion Club's 15th annual meeting on October 18th. Now, first of all, that ISIS would do this, or any of these U.S.-backed, funded, armed-protected groups, extremist groups throughout the world would do this, is not much of a shock. So why is this story so aggressively being denounced by so many people? That usually says something about maybe its validity. Again, come to your own conclusions. He criticized U.S. forces for this catastrophic failure, adding that the terrorists, quote, have delivered ultimatums and made certain demands, threatening to shoot 10 people every day. Now, this again coming from Putin, and said the terrorists already started carrying out their threats and executed 10 hostages just 2 days ago. From the 18th, he said this. So, this is a big deal, and we have to ask ourselves why this is happening. Knowing the very clear, undeniable connections to ISIS as a whole, as well as all these other extremists, I could name all of them off for you, right back to the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia. What is this? Why is this happening? What are they trying to accomplish? Taking attention away from something else that's going to happen? Are they trying to continue to destabilize Syria, which is very clearly part of the plan, as even the U.S., their own mouths have said this, that they want to maintain the destabilization of Syria. So this seems like that would lead to exactly that. Now, on October 17th, the Russian news agency TASS, TASS, reported citing a military diplomatic source that the hostages were captured by ISIS in the province of Deir ez-Zor during a failed advance of the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces and the U.S.-led coalition. Now, as if we needed any more information to really understand what we're talking about here, this is what we've talked about many times on this show. This little sliver of gray right in the center of the map there, right between the red and the yellow in the Euphrates, right on the other side of the Euphrates. It's important to understand what we're looking at here. Here's a little closer picture for you. That is ISIS territory. That little sliver of gray in the yellow, which is U.S.-controlled Kurdish territory, U.S.-controlled territory, has been there from the beginning. As they claim to be fighting ISIS, this little snugged, packed away area where ISIS has continued to thrive, dance back and forth and attack Syria. And every time they do, ISIS or the United States themselves will swing in and defend them. How many articles have we reported on where U.S. is acting as ISIS's air force and defending them against Syria? Ask yourself if they were really fighting ISIS, while they will allow this little sliver of ISIS territory to be snugged away right inside U.S. territory on the other side of the Euphrates. It's an honest question. There's no one has ever tried to answer this, at least on the U.S. side. They ignore this. But this is where we're talking about. As, again, this area that we've also recently talked about, the area further back on the left side, right on the left side of where that little gray smudge is, there used to be a much larger swath of ISIS territory that's no longer there. That's because Syrian troops has removed it. And as they continue to try to remove that little sliver, U.S. troops or U.S.-backed troops and U.S.-controlled areas stop them. So bearing this in mind, in regard to this little area, understanding that they're now reportedly holding American and EU hostages in this area, what else do we need to know to understand that the U.S. is allowing this to take place? That's my opinion. But please, please do, as always, come to your own conclusions about what this ultimately means. Now, according to the Syrian state media, U.S.-led coalition warplanes, in addition, bombed civilian buildings in the village of Al-Susa, killing and injuring multiple civilians. In addition to all of the horrible things, the U.S.-led coalition is often avoiding to comment on these reports. However, even Amnesty International themselves have said repeatedly that Washington is hiding the real number of civilian casualties as a result of its operations in Syria, as we reported on countless times on this very show. I don't know how much more information we really need to see to understand what they're really accomplishing here. Clearly, they're trying to destabilize Syria. Clearly, they're trying to overthrow Assad. But in doing so, they are supporting the very people, the very extremists, that they use as the justification to carry out their war on terror. This is the most despicable contradiction that anybody could carry out. It's hypocrisy at its finest. And they use this guise of humanitarianism to kill the very people they pretend to be fighting for. These are the true villains of the day, people. And we need to begin to recognize this. Now, moving on to the same related idea of this, the villainy that has infiltrated everything, it seems, in regard to U.S. policy, this coming from anti-media, and the man himself, John Bolton, pushes Trump to withdraw from Russian nuclear treaty. Now, this is an important story, but there's a lot to this. Now, years of U.S. allegations that Russia is violating the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, as it's called, the INF, may have essentially be coming to a head today, recently, now, with John Bolton reportedly pushing hard for Trump to withdraw outright from this pact, right? Don't try to point them out and say, look at Russia breaking this treaty. Don't try to say, let's figure this out and make this treaty work. No, say, look, they're breaking it, so we're just going to stop the treaty, because that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it really reveals, I mean, they use this thin veil of claiming that, well, they're not doing it, so there's no reason we should even be in it. But really take a moment and think about what that means. A treaty that is meant to de-escalate nuclear tensions between nuclear superpowers. So when somebody else is violating, instead of gathering the world community and saying, look at them as the bad guy we're trying to show everybody, no, they just pull out of things like this. Which shows you that they don't want to be in this. It has nothing to do with Russia, and I'll get to more on that in a moment. Now, instead of negotiating over these questions, Bolton wants the U.S. to just withdraw, despite that being a major escalation of tensions with Russia, which I would say he clearly wants. The State Department and Pentagon officials are actually opposed to this. U.S. Ambassador Kay Bailey Hutchinson actually suggested that the U.S. was preparing for a preemptive attack against Russia. Maybe one of those preemptive counterattacks we've been hearing so much about, and, quote, take out the missiles they consider a violation. That is unbelievable. Likely just talk, but even saying such a thing is stuff that should be in our nightmares. That's the beginning of World War III. That is a big deal, and hopefully we don't see that. Now, in a related story, directly related, moving actually to the actions being taken place, in fact, Trump to pull the U.S. out of the 1987 nuclear weapons treaty with Russia. This coming from Trump. Now, President Trump actually said on Saturday that he plans to abandon the 1987 arms control treaty, that has, on paper at least, prohibited the U.S. and Russia from deploying intermediate-range nuclear missiles, as Russia has continued to, quote, repeatedly violate, as they say, its terms according to the president of the United States, Donald Trump. Now, he goes on, this coming from, it says, quote, we're not going to let them violate a nuclear agreement, coming from Donald Trump on Saturday after a campaign. He said, we're going to terminate the agreement, point blank. Now, again, whether this happens, Trump says a lot of stuff. A lot of times he says things that don't happen, whether that's planned and calculated or it's just because he's flying out off the seat of his pants and people like John Bolton, maybe the real leaders of this country, pull him back. Come to your own conclusions about that. I think you know where I stand, but I can't say I know for sure. But whether it happens is yet to be determined. But the fact that he point blank said we are going to terminate this agreement is a big deal. Now, the pact has limited the U.S. from deploying weapons to counter the burgeoning military threat posed by China in the Western Pacific. So do you think that maybe gives them a reason to want to end this pact? Because China is not involved in this pact. So stopping them from deploying weapons to counter China, maybe they just want to get rid of this pact to actually be able to do what they want to do in regard to China. Do you think that plays into their decision-making process? Do you think that would justify them making false accusations about Russia while they've led a career of false accusations against Russia? Probably. So think about that and understand that we've been lied to repeatedly, incessantly by these people and many in other and previous administrations about all kinds of foreign policy. So we have to consider that they're likely lying to us about this in order to break this agreement so they can continue to escalate other tensions with other nuclear powers on the other side of the world. Because that's what they do. Russian President Vladimir Putin appeared to try and get in front of this and the U.S.'s decision to leave. And this week when he declared that Russia would abide by a policy of non-aggression regarding its nuclear arsenal, agreeing only to use its nuclear weapons if it is attacked first. Which essentially are just words, but something, in fact, the U.S. has refused to do. Even in a lot of ways, embracing an attack-first policy, which is pretty alarming. Again, something that's almost unprecedented in regard to the past administrations and countries' policies of trying to de-escalate the risk of nuclear war, which has ramped up to 10 since Trump has been elected. And I'm not saying that's Donald Trump's fault, but very clearly all of the very hawkish, military-minded people that he's gathered around him. Some of the worst I've ever seen. Now, the question of whether Russia is actually violating the INF is the real question here. Russia argues the missiles in question are not in violation of the treaty, point blank. Well, U.S. officials have never even attempted to prove that they are. They just repeatedly claim such violations happened. That sound familiar at all? Like what they're saying about Syria, like what they're saying about Iran, like what they're saying about Venezuela, like what they're saying about any number of things without actually having facts to back it up. Just saying, trust us, we've got proof, they say so, and just never showing us anything. But that doesn't mean we should trust Russia either. But in fact, they have supported the information that they brought forward and shown that they feel that what they can show clearly, they're not violating the deal, and here's why. And in fact, many, including Russia, have long voiced concerns that the U.S. itself has already been violating this treaty for years, as we reported on the last time we talked about this story. So think about all of this in regard to as this escalates and ask yourself, who has been escalating these kind of dramas in the world, these kind of potential war scenes, even just in the last so many years? But before, with Bush and Obama and whoever else, who has been the catalyst here? Who has been the aggressor? And ask yourself if maybe this is just one more treaty to pump out of the way so they can continue to do so. Bolton, somebody who has repeatedly called for aggression with North Korea, for Russia, for Iran, for all of these people. And he's the one leading this charge. Think about that. In another story, semi-domestic policy-ish, I would say, following this with a domestic policy story to finish off the show today, I found this to be very interesting. This is a story that kind of slipped under my radar. It's kind of the follow-up to a story that I really tried to avoid because there was not a lot to go on. But a lot of people jumped on this story, even people that I trust. But I'm glad that I did not, at least as this goes so far. This isn't solid for this story just yet, but it shows you another side of this. But we should always be questioning everything, as always, but asking questions. This story coming from Extreme Tech, entitled Apple Denies Bloomberg Chinese Hacking Story to Congress. Now, this is interesting because this story seems like it kind of came and went really quickly and everyone just, well, looks like China is involved in our technology. Not very a big shocking story. Well, of course, they're trying to. I don't think that surprises anyone. The U.S. is doing the same thing aggressively all over the world. Doesn't justify either side. But the interesting story here is that we all took this story at face value. Bloomberg says China is hacking everything we have, showing the little diagrams of rice-sized whatever inside of all of our technology, chips inside of all of our technology. But the reality of the story seems to be crumbling right in front of them. But is that the lie? Something we need to be asking ourselves, but we should not be taking anything at face value. Now, ultimately, this what has been developing since this, that article is actually from the 8th. So as I said, this kind of flew under my radar, but just yesterday and today, it's actually developed even further. Because as I've seen, the Department of Homeland Security has come out with an entire statement saying that the entire Bloomberg story is false, which is kind of interesting because I've seen other U.S. personnel embrace this story as a way to continue to spend more on the military-industrial complex, using that as justification to sell or get rid of other material that could potentially be threatened by China and just buying all new equipment. In addition to this, what I found oddly, weeks after this story, which is interesting. Apple CEO Tim Cook is now openly calling for Bloomberg to retract the entire story, point blank saying that Bloomberg's story is false. And right now, today, recently calling for a complete retraction, again, with the backing of the Department of Homeland Security. So was this all a fraud? Was this entire story fake? Was this all propaganda designed to do a certain thing? Was this propaganda designed to allow them to spend more money on the military? If so, why is the Department of Homeland Security agreeing that the story is false? There's a lot of crossed wires here. But according to Bloomberg Business Week's investigation, this is a result of more than a year of reporting, during which they conducted more than 100 interviews, they say. 17 individual sources, including government officials and insiders at these very companies. Apparently, they confirmed the manipulation of the hardware and other elements of the attacks. They say, quote, "We stand by our story and are confident in our reporting and our sources." But as always, so many of these sources are just things that they say, unnamed sources within the government, which we're just supposed to agree with. But it's interesting to see this contrasting even from the government. Again, this was a story that was taken at face value by so many people to point out the weaknesses of the U.S. government, or in contrast, to show that China's a big threat and Trump's doing the right thing. Interestingly enough, using any story like this to bend to whichever side you are on their false two-party paradigm. But as the article points out, yet here we are 5 days later, and the findings Bloomberg alleged have not been confirmed by any other outlets. The companies involved continue to strongly protest. Bloomberg continues to say just as strongly that it stands by its story. The potential involvement of national security complicates things because the federal government is perfectly capable of ordering a company to just lie about whether it's received a message. Yet companies that are lying tend to err on the side of saying precisely what they can say and precious little else. It's the surest way to stay out of trouble. Could the story and strongly worded denials still be part of a national security story meant to sow fear, uncertainty, and doubt about what the United States actually knows or doesn't know about the intelligence capabilities of China? Sure. At this point, that makes as much sense as anything, but the fundamentals of this situation don't make much sense, period. And with that, I completely agree. But think about what they're saying there. The reality, as we know, about the legalization of propaganda in this country and the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. Could this just be an aggressive national security lie in order to do one of any number of things? Something we need to consider. I just wanted to put that out there and make sure you had all of the facts in this story, because it seems like this was a foregone conclusion that China had hacked all of our Apple material and hacked everything in this country. And oh my God, it's a big China invasion. One of any number of things like that, with a lot of conclusions and conjecture and supposition with not a lot of facts to back it up. For the final story of the day, this coming from Antimedia for indeed some domestic policy news, which is a little bit alarming to me. Interestingly, involving the Pentagon, which who knows why the Pentagon should be involved in anything on domestic soil. This entitled, "For Next Weapon in Anti-Protest Arsenal, U.S. Military Building Plasma Gun Capable of Vaporizing Human Flesh." Sure, because that's what you need for anti-protests. Guns, apparently, that can vaporize human flesh. Again, why the Pentagon is involved in this, it should be very alarming to us, this military police state that is arising around us while people are blinding themselves to the truth. So recent reporting out of the Pentagon reveals that the U.S. military, again, the military, is working on perfecting what they call a scalable, compact, ultra-short pulse laser system, or plasma gun for short, intended for mounting on a truck or a tank. Anti-protest guns on a tank, that makes sense. Built as the military's latest crowd control technology, what has this typically, this ultimately is under the guise of non-lethal, which is clearly not. This weapon's designed for use by militaries or police forces against unruly demonstrators, for those standing against powerful state actors or corporate forces. Now, usually they try to frame this as some kind of a crowd control in some third world country that you never have to look at. But these things always have a way of finding them right in our streets and our towns, as they always have. But they're not even trying to do that this time. This is straight up for crowd control. Boom. Something that could vaporize your flesh. Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Now, according to U.S. government documents, the aim of the ongoing project is to develop, quote, a lightweight and energy efficient next generation ultra short pulse laser system that can produce sustainable and controllable plasma at range capable of inducing a full spectrum of scalable non-lethal effects. As a so-called scalable weapon, it will be able to shoot not only piercing sounds, but also apparently burn off or vaporize human skin. And, of course, ultimately kill, could be used to kill. But, you know, non-lethal, we're just going to say that, even though we can kill it. Of course, a gun can be non-lethal if you pop someone in the head with it, but it can also be turned around and shoot somebody with. This ridiculous narrative that this is some kind of a non-lethal weapon is ridiculous. But this is the next generation of crowd control in this country. Ask her again, why the Pentagon and the military is involved in any kind of a weapon that's going to be used domestically on Americans needs to be alarming to us. But it's become normal. Our police have become the military. It's something that we need to recognize. This idea of the boiling frog. If you don't know that whatever you want to call it, that fable, that narrative, that story, the idea of that a frog, if put in boiling water, will hop right out. However, if you put that frog in cold water and slowly turn up the temperature, it'll stay in there until it dies. And this is, in fact, an old story. But realize what that means to what's happening around us. That things are changing. Things are rising. The heat is going up for your own protection, of course. But let that sit in. Reflect on all this information. Share this with everybody you care about, you know, or even the ones you hate. Get this information out there to everybody. Because it's important that we share these things and talk about it. And research the stuff. Dive into this. Don't just listen to what I have to say. Make sure you hop over and join me. I'll be joining Titus on his live stream following this show directly. I'll be right over there in a few minutes. So jump over and watch that show as well. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.